Monday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks so much for tuning in today. An incredible show lined up. I'm very excited. We've been putting this together for, it seems like, months. And before we get started, let me give a shout out to those folks listening in Crozet and over in the valley on the new 101.1. What an interesting number. 101.1. Easy, so easy to remember. And support for WNRN comes from the Wolf Trap, presenting the legendary Levon Helm on Thursday, June 9th at Wolf Trap National Park for the Performing Arts. A music icon and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, it's the Levon Helm Band with a special guest, Mo. Tickets are on sale at wolftrap.org or call them up, 877-WOLF-TRAP. That's the Levon Helm Band at Wolf Trap, where the arts come out to play. All right, let me get everybody on here. Because the guests today, we're going to be talking with three amputees and the woman who helped me put this program together, Mary Grant. Mary, let's start with you. Say hello.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. Mary, your official title and place of business?
I am a certified prosthetist, and you need to say that very carefully. I work at the University of Virginia Prosthetic and Orthotic Department. I'm on faculty there as a part of the Orthopedic Department.
And I will never get all that correct. I have Orthopedic Surgery Prosthetist.
I'm a prosthetist.
Prosthetist. This is probably what I have down here and just can't pronounce it properly.
It's a hard one.
Yes. Not that my mother would be very proud of me for even trying. Let's go clockwise from, you have Judy Martin. Judy, how are you?
Hi, fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here, Judy Martin. A recent amputee, is that correct?
That's correct, October of last year.
October of 2010?
Uh-huh.
A below knee, and that's something we'll get into. There's below knee, there's above knee, and a variety of others. Mary?
Yes, there is. Depends on where they're amputated and determines the level of their, like above the knee, it would be an AK. Below the knee would be a BK.
And Judy Martin, a recent amputee and through a medical purpose.
Yes, diabetes and circulation problems.
And I was surprised to find out, and I'm sure this will come up again, that there are actually more amputees medically rather than from trauma. And so that'll be interesting throughout the hour. I think that that was one of the first things that shook my supposed knowledge on the topic. Over the other side of Mary, we have Dawn Cornell. That's D-A-W-N, and that's going to mess me up all hour. I'll be pointing as to who I'm specifically speaking with. Dawn Cornell, Dawn, a below-knee amputee, forklift accident.
Yes, sir.
And again, we're going to have people tell their stories as much as they're willing to share. And then over we have Don Crosby. Don, you a Vietnam War vet.
That's correct.
And for quite some time. I mean, you lost your limb during the Vietnam War?
December 1970, so that makes it 40-plus years.
Goodness. Again, the topic today, amputees, we will be speaking with three amputees from a variety of reasons and length of time that this has been a part of their life. And then we have Mary Grant. I'm not even going to try this again. Prosthetist.
That's really close. We'll go with that.
I hope everyone who's listening and going, how can you not say that properly, could try it yourself. And Mary, from the University of Virginia, a faculty member working in this area.
Correct.
If you write down the phone number, because I have a feeling that there's going to be some people with some questions to bring in, 979-0919, that's the local number, 979-0919. Toll free, a little further out, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, that's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Kristen's here today answering calls. That's because Sean McCord turning 50 this weekend. So Sean is out. I believe he's recovering from his party. I think the 50th birthday party was yesterday. So give a shout-out to Sean McCord, often here producing the show, turning 50. All right, let's go ladies first. And I think since, for many people, the idea is that amputeeism? That's the word that I keep wanting to say. But I don't know that that would be
that.
Amputeeism. I have a habit of inventing my own words. Let's start with Dawn Cornell, because it's a trauma. It's an accident that brought this about. Can you share your story?
Right. Well, initially, the accident was in 1995. It was a crush injury from a forklift. I had actually had just a partial foot. Waited to see if the foot was going to grow back for 4 years and decided it was not, and decided to go ahead and have a below-the-knee amputation.
When you say waited to grow back, I was waiting to see how much you were going to smile and your eyes were going to light up. Obviously, you were, I take that as part of your acceptance of the issue?
Pretty much, yeah. Took 4 years.
You don't often hear of a woman in a forklift accident. A little more detail in that.
I worked at a warehouse club and, got to compete with the guys,
Were you driving?
I was driving the forklift. I like the big machines. And the forklift malfunctioned and caused me to crash into another, and the foot was caught in between them.
So 1995, is that what I heard?
1995.
Yeah, I have to take notes as I go. 1995, and so you said that you had actually two different surgeries?
Right. 4 years later, in December of 99, I decided that the quality of life is not what I wanted, and from a amputee support group found out that my life would probably be a lot better have I go ahead and have the below-the-knee amputation.
And the support group, was that the local support group here that Mary's involved with?
Yeah, Limbs on the Go.
So Limbs on the Go. It is a local support group that meets, Mary?
We meet on the second Tuesday of every month, and it's open to any amputee, no matter where they have their leg made, or if they don't have to be in the Charlottesville area. It can be from any place, and they're welcome to come. We meet out at a conference room at Health South, UVA Health South. And we usually start around 7 o'clock. We sometimes have guest speakers. We sometimes do activities. We go bowling. We go putt-putt. We eat out. But the main thing I think that I get from it is just new amputees getting help from people who've been amputees and learning from each other.
All right. I still have two guests left to talk. We have you've heard from Dawn Cornell talking about her forklift accident. That was Mary Grant, who is a faculty member at the university, working with amputees and prosthetics. I think I'll stick with that. Another guest in the room today is Judy Martin, a below-knee amputee. And recently from a medical reason, and Judy, talk about that a little bit, because I think for many people, again, it's the accident. It's always the accident. It's the car accident. It's the war veteran, et cetera. And Mary informed me as we were going along, and she put together the majority of this show as I sent her an email saying, how about this? And then she found all the guests, et cetera, and told me that's just not the case. Talk about your situation.
I'm diabetic for at least 20 years, and my doctor kept monitoring my circulation in my feet and legs and hands, and sent me to Martha Jefferson for a Doppler ultrasound on my right leg because the pulse had decreased, and at that time, circulation was going fine, and then a week later, they couldn't hear any blood getting through to my foot, so they sent me to the emergency room and did all kind of tests, all kind of procedures, trying to get blood to go to my foot and lower leg, and there was nothing they could do because diabetes had attacked the blood vessels and all the arteries or veins or whatever in my legs, because evidently I have vascular problems as well. And October the 18th, they decided to take off my leg. I'm sorry.
No, and that's one of the bits that I want to get into shortly is dealing with that. I have it's something that it's difficult for me to imagine, and I want to talk with you about it. And I hope you can.
I will.
I hope you can share that with us. And we also hear over in the corner, tucked away and blocked in by many microphones and wires, Don Crosby. I was told that you were the most likely to run out of the room. So you're attached in. Don Crosby, above knee war veteran. It seems so obvious to many people. Well, of course, that's what causes the loss of limb.
That's not a lot of the things that cause loss of limb, but for war veterans, in my particular case, it was a gunshot wound that hit my leg below the knee, shattered the bone, sliced up the arteries in the process. They attempted to reattach the arteries, and when that didn't work and gangrene had set in, they started out with a below the knee, and then I wound up with an above the knee. Mine happened to be a gunshot wound. I think you'll hear a lot of the, I call them kids today because that's what they are to me, a lot of the kids today and the incidents we're involved in Iraq tend to be blast-related, which brings on a whole different set of dynamics.
Can you, I mean, without going into great detail because this that part didn't happen to you, but what is the difference?
A lot of the difference when you have, as I understand it, and I haven't done a lot of research on it, but blast dynamics, first of all, it tends to shatter the legs or the arms, as opposed to, in my case, a gunshot wound that was fairly clean, although it did shatter the bone. But you also got to deal with head trauma. And so a lot of these guys, as I understand it, are not only dealing with amputation, but they've got to deal with brain injuries from the shaking and what have you that's caused by the blast.
You mentioned gangrene. Is that something, and question goes to you, Dawn, and to you, Mary, is that something that existed then in 1960-ish, or gangrene being a concern because you said that the original surgery was below knee?
Original surgery was below the knee, where they attempted to put the arteries and veins back together end to end to reestablish the circulation. Because of a blood clot, that did not happen, and gangrene set in at the wound site. So they wound up 3 days later doing additional surgery to remove my leg below the knee. And unfortunately, they had not gotten all of the gangrene had gone further than they had thought and wound up in the knee itself, which then, after I'd been medevaced to Japan, they wound up doing additional surgery, making it above the knee.
Mary, is that something that was medically related to a former time, or does that sort of issue follow today?
It still follows today. It can be from different reasons, but gangrene is still alive and well. It still happens to many patients.
All right, our guest today, Mary Grant, faculty member at the University of Virginia, Judy Martin, Dawn Cornell, and Don Crosby. I don't know how in the world anybody can tell the difference between my Don and Dawn, but a male and a female. Again, people who've been dealing with this from as far as 40 years ago to within the last year. 11:15 on the wake-up call. Let me give a shout to Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville. They have three locations in Richmond. For more information online, it's brms.com. I don't know who wants to go first, but I want to talk about the problems that each of you had after the loss of your limb. Anybody want to raise your hand, or do I need to point? I see I see Dawn Cornell. Dawn, your forklift accident 10 years ago, actually more than that, 16 years ago, for the initial trauma, and then 4 years later with a follow-up surgery to change the situation. Tell me the difference between the initial 4 years and then after that.
The first 4 years was really rough. It was surgery after surgery, probably about 14, 15 altogether, just revisions and breaking down of the bone, breaking down of the skin, being able to walk for maybe 2 hours a day, trying to find something that would fit so I could walk, and it just did not. It was miserable. It was painful, and it was miserable.
When you say something to fit,
some sort of prosthetic, some sort of boot, or to make the end of my foot.
Because you still had a foot below the ankle.
I had a heel, right. I had just the heel to walk on. And so you can walk around your house just walking around on your heel, and you can kind of get an idea of what it was like. Obviously that didn't work out for long. And I got to thinking of, I remember one thing my mother had said to me when I got one of my new, kind of like an orthotic type of thing. She had said to me, she says, well, don't go running with that. You're going to get hurt. And my initial thought was, I hope I fall in a hole, break it off, and have to have an amputation below the knee.
Why wasn't that originally done?
They try to save as much as possible.
So that was, were you asked that, or because you were under, because you were being serviced medically at the time, they just said, this is what we're going to do, and you woke up after the fact?
I think their initial is save as much as possible. I don't remember much of the conversation due to the drugs and the, stuff from the hospital. So I don't remember much of it at all. But I know I was told what they try to do is save as much as possible, which almost made it a little bit worse, but maybe for some people it's better.
And then 4 years later, you make the choice to
take it off.
And it sounds, and again, how much further along were you in the acceptance of it, and did you have to repeat any of that process after you had another surgery to remove more of the limb?
Sure, but I think I had given it enough time. I think I had exhausted all my possibilities with the help of Mary and the crew over at Prosthetics, realized we cannot find anything that's going to work with this. The next step is take it off below the knee and let's put a leg under you that you can actually walk on. It wasn't difficult to make the decision because, like I said, I think I had waited long enough. But it was difficult when I first started out because it's getting used to something new. So,
Mary, Dawn mentions saving as much of the limb as possible. Tell me a little bit about how that decision is made. And in the case of what Dawn seems to be saying is, don't know that that was really the best interest of the individual at the time, at least not for user-friendly? I mean, is that the...
That's probably a good term. Her initial accident was in upstate New York, and having known Dawn for a long time, I would say that there were a lot of problems with her initial care at this facility, to the point where her family took her and rushed her down here to UVA. At that point, they had already gone in and done a partial foot. I mean, she had the heel and a little bit of forefoot. And the problem comes with that level of amputation is that there's so much stress force on the front part of her limb that she was constantly breaking it down. She was constantly having skin grafts, and it was not allowing her to have the activity level that she wanted. She was a young woman. She hadn't gotten married at that point. She has since gotten married. But it wasn't allowing her to have the life she wanted. She was alive, but when they're doing surgeries, oftentimes when it's a trauma, they are foremost trying to save that person's life. I think there has been a thought in a lot of medical circles that you want to keep as much of the limb as possible. That may be true on one level of medicine, but in the world of prosthetics, we tried so many different things on Dawn, both strictly prosthetics or a hybrid of an orthosis and a prosthesis, trying to get her back to where she could walk all day without breaking down. But there was such stress and such shear on the front part of her foot that wasn't it wasn't working. And she opted after many years, but to have a revision done, and she spoke at great length with the support group, she spoke at great length with the surgeon, and the decision was made. I've seen this with a lot of patients that feel that they can stand on their 2 feet, and she could. She could stand on her heel, but she wasn't able to do the things she wanted to do, and so she had the revision. And even though not every day is perfect, I think having known her long enough that it was a good decision for her. And she's able to do so much more than she was able at that time to do.
11:21 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with three amputees, Don Crosby, Dawn Cornell, Judy Martin, and Mary Grant, who's a faculty member over at the University of Virginia, working with prosthetics. Dial us up with your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCK. Send us an instant message to WNRN Studio on the AOL account. Right now, it is the Marcus of Fagerfield forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms today, highs in the upper 80s. Mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of thunderstorms and showers tonight. In the lower 60s, even cooler in the valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the mid-80s. Right now it's cloudy across the listening area, 70 in the valley, 77 in Lynchburg, 72 in Richmond, 75 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank The Backyard for their support today. UVA's Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a spring menu, daily specials, and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. For more info, it's 434-202-8215, thebackyarduva.com, or on Facebook. All right, let's see. We got a caller coming in, but I have to push some different buttons. Robert, you with me?
Yes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you? All right, I'm going to give you a 1, 2, 3, go, and then you can start talking, all right, so everybody can hear you.
Let me make sure
I got all the buttons where I want them to be. And, Robert, go.
Okay. Hey, good morning, y'all. My first question is for the doctor from, I don't know if she's a doctor or a therapist who works with prosthesis at UVA. Isn't there some one of your guests?
Yep, do your thing.
That person? Okay. Just wondering if you could let people know, for the sake of people heading into war zones now, what kind of chances they have of living full lives after having some kind of traumatic injury that results in an amputation. I mean, how good is the technology at present time?
Well, I would have to tell you that technology-wise, from when I first started in this business till today, there are so many options, so many choices of types of knees and ankles and feet and suspension and interfaces that I would say, and again, I'm not an amputee, but I would say, and I'll let Dawn speak to it as well, that being an amputee in and of itself is not going to keep you from having the life that you want. Most of using a prosthesis is motivation and wanting to do it and wanting to have the life to play with your kids and to work that you love and to travel. Those things are not going to be, they don't have to be not part of your life if you don't let it not be that way. other injuries coming from war will do far more to keep you from those things than just being an amputee. I have seen some and worked with some marvelous people, and when they set their mind to doing something, they may not be able to do it the same way they used to, but they find a way to do it, and they have friends that help them. They have family that help them. So I think I would say I hope it never happens to somebody going to war. Realistically, it probably will, but there are people out there that can help you get that life back if you really work hard. And it is hard work. Everyone in this room would tell you that you have to work at wanting the life that you want.
Well, that's very good to hear from someone such as yourself. Thank you. And I guess I hear you when you say there are other injuries that are far worse to a person's future than an amputation. And living the life that they want. Because, you know, as you were speaking, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, even before there was technology, there have been amputees in war who've gone on to lead fulfilling lives and satisfying lives, achieve their goals and dreams. Isn't that right?
Yeah, Civil War. As a matter of fact, one of the people who made the first prosthetic came from Churchville, Virginia. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you three examples. You talked about how do people survive. The technology today, most of the people who are injured, even in Vietnam and currently, those medevac pilots are absolute lifesavers. They will get you back to a hospital in less than an hour in most cases. In my case, I was back at the hospital in 30 minutes, and I would guarantee you in a lot of places, even on 29 today, if you were in an ambulance, you wouldn't get to UVA in 30 minutes. I was there in 30 minutes. In terms of technology, in my case, the first prosthetic that I had was nothing more than a door hinge with a screw to give it some type of friction. And that's not much of a technology, whereas today the prosthesis that I have has a microprocessor in it. And instead of me trying to adapt a little bit to the gait of the limb, the limb will adapt to what I'm doing. And then I will echo what Mary says. You can do whatever you put your mind to do in terms of being an amputee. I don't run, never did like to run. So I don't run all that much, but I can walk and, with the proper fit, and that's another key to it, and the proper motivation. I mean, I'll put my prosthesis on at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it doesn't come off until 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and I have no issues with it.
All right, Robert, thanks for the phone call. You are welcome to call up with your question or comment at 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Guests today, Judy Martin, Dawn Cornell, Don Crosby, all three of amputees, both difference in type, length of time, and reason. Our medical side of the things guest, Mary Grant, UVA faculty. Judy, let me get back to you. The most recent amputee in the room, and I was asking about acceptance and dealing with daily life. Can you talk about the struggles that you've had to deal with for that?
Yes, you have to relearn how to do a few basic chores. Two days after surgery, they had me standing up on one foot trying to get me to, you know, maneuver around. And it's like, oh, dear God, what am I going to do? I just need to lay back down and get off. I can't do this. But after a couple of days, you learn that, this is not what I want to do the rest of my life. I want to get up and walk around and do, walk around as good as I can right now. But you just have to take one day at a time. You just get up and do it and be motivated. And thank God I have a lot of family support. You just do what you have to do. And I still have my pity parties every other day now rather than every day. But it's good. It feels so good to get up and start doing some of the things that you used to do. I'm like Donna, never ran. I wasn't a physical fitness person or whatever, but I'm in better shape now than I have been in years. Part of it is just being motivated to carry on and to keep my other leg good. And that was another fear that I had after surgery. Oh my, this, you know, it's feeling for the same things that happened in my right leg. I look for my left leg, because I worry that it's, you know, it's on a countdown too. But when you lose a limb, it's like you lose one of your best friends. I mean, so you have to go through the grieving stages, and it's a process. And you learn all about, to me, when I first learned about having to get an artificial leg, it was, well, how does it fit? How does it do this? And I went to the support group, and it was wonderful. I had people there that answered my stupid questions, because I had not a clue. And Mary has been wonderful through the whole process. And it is an ongoing process. You just learn to deal with it and go on and just try to live your life as normal as you can.
And again, that support group, Limbs on the Go.
Correct.
Did you say second Tuesday?
We meet on the second Tuesday of every month.
Okay. And I think all I did was Google Charlottesville amputee support, and that's how I found Mary, for her to pretty much put this program together. Judy, you talk about the energy that's needed to do this. Do you get your from yourself or your friends and family? Who supports you? How much of this are you providing from within, and how much is coming from others to say, look, you got to do it. You know, the pity party ends today. You can't have this again today.
No, I have to have a pity party. I'm sorry. I just have to. it's an equal part. I mean, my family, friends, coworkers that I used to work with, it's just, you have to be motivated inside. And it's springtime now, and I've always been an outside person, and it's a whole thing, a whole hodgepodge of support. So,
all right, I want to follow up on that in a moment, but we have another caller. And how are you today? Oh, are you there? Are you there? I'm sorry, but I don't hear anything. I don't know if anybody else did. Sorry if you were talking and I couldn't hear you. Dial up again 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We'll get Kristen to take your question if I couldn't do so properly. A WNRN studio is the instant message line. Judy, I want to follow back up with that. It's your first spring. It's your first time. It's also your first leg, is that correct? Is this your first prosthetic?
Yes.
Tell me how I was amazed to find out that you don't get a prosthetic that you then change as you sort of wear it out like a pair of shoes. The leg shrinks, and so you have to continually. The gentleman that I know, as it gets smaller, then he puts on more and more socks.
Yes.
To make it fit. Talk about getting used to and constantly changing.
When I first got it, it was cooler, and it's a very involved process. It's a gel liner that fits with a little pin thing down at the bottom that fits into the artificial part of the leg. But over the gel lining, you put on different thicknesses of socks that help protect your tibia bone, which I've learned since all of this. And right now I'm wearing six thicknesses of socks, and it's very hot, it's very sweaty, and now it's really a process. And then now I'm in the middle part of the fitting stages and things, and my leg is shrinking, and whenever I take like maybe 10 steps, I have to sit down and check to see if the artificial leg is loose, and put on another sock if I need to. And it's a learning process. You have to feel, learn what things feel like. I'm still in the awkward stage. It's all quite new to me, but it's a learning process, and it's a fitting process, and it will I will get better, and then I will, everything else will work out.
And Mary, that's not unusual. I mean, that's a standard.
It really is for most new amputees. And I look at somebody as being a new amputee through the first year. What she's talking about in terms of the socks is that the leg itself is not changing. Her limb is changing. Her, and the politically correct term is residual limb. Most people call it the stump, or some people have names for it. But that, their body, their limb is what is changing. And then she will add socks to take up for whatever volume is that she's lost in that leg. Weather can make a big difference. For Judy, she's such a new amputee, she's losing more of the swelling from the surgery. But weight loss, weight gain in the course of a life can affect the fit. Weather changes, food that they eat, anything like that can make a difference in whether they add or take off a sock. But the socks are a fitting tool. But as she shrinks, she keeps adding more to keep herself in the right place in the leg. So, you know, we're in the process now that she's got all the socks she can fit on comfortably, and we're going to start her a new socket. What's typical for most new amputees is to go through several sockets. You don't have to make the whole prosthesis, but the socket part is what their limb goes in. And if their limb changes significantly, then you have to make a new socket. You can still reuse the same components, like the foot and all. But what Judy's experiencing is normal and typical, but it can be frustrating because they have to add them pretty frequently.
11:37 on the wake-up calls. We talk with three amputees and Mary Grant, who's an orthopedic surgery specialist at the University of Virginia. And I see everyone. Mary just completely grimaced at that. Well, so we'll say that she works with prosthetics for the University of Virginia.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily an orthopedic specialist.
But that's what I had typed down from something, so
yeah,
we'll stay with that.
We'll just stick with prosthetists.
Caller on the line, hang on just 1 second. Today's programming brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. All right, let's try this again. Call, are you with me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, and I'm going to set it so the guests can hear you as well. All right, fire away.
My comment is for Dawn Cornell. Dawn Cornell.
She's here. She can hear you.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Go ahead.
Hi, my
daughter.
We love you, Mom.
We love you, Mom.
Okay. That is my husband.
You're doing a great job. We love you.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Thank you, sweetie.
All right, we'll sit and listen to the rest of the show. You're doing great. You guys are all doing great. See you later. Say bye.
Bye, Mark.
Bye. So
all right.
Talk about my support group. That's it right there.
That's your support group. You know, we had an instant message that came across. Again, it's WNRN Studio on the AOL instant message that asked, let's see where I wrote that down. What was it like meeting your husband? So did you meet your husband after the trauma?
Wow, what a story. Well, actually, we were dating at the time of the accident, but we didn't really click very well. So he knew me with both legs, and now he's known me with only one. We had got together about a year or so after the accident, got back together. And he didn't have, there was no change in him. It didn't matter if I was missing a leg or if I still had both legs. It just, you know, wasn't different for him at all. So I did run across some, you know, guys because I was in my younger years, and of course they'd look at me and you know, turn away quickly because, you know, she may look good from the top up, but, you know, once you see that leg, oh, she's, like, broken, so let's just move on. And that was rough. Psychologically, that was a little rough, but I, you know, I had enough friends around me, and they're not worth it. You know, people that aren't going to look at you from the inside, you don't want to spend the rest of your life with somebody that's just going to look at you for the outside. You know, we all get old and wrinkly, right?
What are you saying? I had a friend ask me the other day. Well, that's not in, it's not needed for the show. 11:40 on the wake up call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, Virginia's a leader among states in preserving historic homes and rewarding those who renovate them with tax credits. But why are only the rich taking advantage? The state remains mum as Biscuit Run appraisers go unpunished. And mining natural gas comes with some risks of water contamination, but is there a new method that might solve at least some of our energy problems? This week on The Hook, it's Think Globally and Read Locally. And we want to thank Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. It's 978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. And Les Temps Perdue will be here at noon. That's Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative with bands like The Feelies, Thomas Dolby, and The Replacements. Brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. Requests are always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. And let me remind you about the Nelson County SPCA hosting its Animal House Ball at the Skyline Pavilion at Wintergreen. Lazarus comes from the Nelson County SPCA. The 8th annual event will raise funds to support the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. The ball features food and drinks and music, raffles, and a silent auction. Call 361-2440. That's Mountain Area Realty. Mountain Area Realty to reserve a spot. All right, back with our guests. We have Mary Grant, we have Don Crosby, we have Judy Martin, and Dawn Cornell, whose family is listening. I want to talk for a minute about getting through your home. What sort of changes had to be made to living the everyday life? It's not just getting used to the limb, but isn't it also getting used to the world around you? Don Crosby, talk a minute about that, because I guess for you it's been the longest period of time.
In terms of changes to my home or not made any changes to my home. I know what my limitations are and what I can do. But my current home, the one adjustment I have made is a lot of homes have the master bedroom upstairs. Mine is on the first floor, which makes it easier. But other than that, I have made no changes. Where I work, there are stairs, and just for exercise, I will I will go up and down the stairs as much as I can, although there is an elevator available. With the change in technology, one of the things I have been able to do, when you think about walking downstairs, people go one step over the other. With the old technology, you could not do that. It was go down one step, plant the other foot, go down one step, plant the good foot. Now with the new technology, I am able to go downstairs one over the other as if I had my actual knee, and it's that technology has changed and made that part of it a lot more useful and helpful.
Don Crosby, an above-knee amputee from the Vietnam War veteran. Judy Martin, a below-knee amputee and recent, just from October of 2010. And I hope this isn't a difficult topic, but you're in a wheelchair. It seems to me it would definitely affect how you live through your home, get around anywhere, etc.
I can walk at times. I'm in the process of learning how to do that. I'm in outpatient therapy. My master bedroom, unfortunately, was on the second floor, and I had 14 steps to go up. So now my bedroom is in the living room, the way that my house is, and it's been a challenge. I was scared to come home. Nervous. I was scared because And where I was an inpatient, you had 24 hour, and then I could ring a bell and somebody would be there. But at home, it's not always the case, and it's been a process. But it's getting better. I'm now walking with the walker. I just can't go outside yet, but I can walk through the house with a walker. This week in therapy, I have done walking with one cane, which is in the learning and the way that it goes, and doing okay. But my goal was to get back upstairs on May 14th, my birthday, but that didn't happen. But it will. I know that it will, and things will get back to semi-normal.
I mean, there are services available that will assess people's homes and where they work as to what are their needs, what changes need to be made to the home or your environment to help you out. In my particular case, at the present time, I haven't felt the need for that, but maybe it's coming. Who knows?
The biggest problem for most amputees and most people who have any reason to be in a wheelchair is the bathroom. Most homes aren't built with big enough, or not big enough, but wide enough doors. So that's always a problem. But if they can get in, then the thing they have to look at is, what do they do with the bathtub? A lot of people use shower benches or shower chairs and stuff. They adapt the existing bathroom for things that they can use. And physical and occupational therapy are great for being able to go into the home and saying, you need this device, this tool, these rails on the toilet to help you get up. And so there are things that can be changed about an existing, but sometimes bathrooms are the biggest challenge for people.
11:47 on the wake-up call. That was Mary Grant from the University of Virginia faculty. We have Don Crosby and Dawn Cornell and Judy Martin here, all amputees of one sort or another. Judy, Dawn Cornell mentioned during the dating process as some of those guys seen her as broken. Have you had, tell me about you, and are people, family see you as fragile?
No. you've heard of tough love where a parent does to the child? Mine is in reverse. My children are my tough love, and they know that I can do it. It's just, come on, Ma, you can do it, or we'll sit here while you figure out how to do it. But they don't see me as fragile. I'm sorry. My friends don't. They know me. They know I have a strong willpower, and no, they don't see me as fragile.
Don Crosby? 40 years. I don't know what the percentage, and Mary, let me direct this to you real quick. Percentage of people who are now amputees, has it grown in number?
Probably in some ways, because medicine allows people to live longer. And so there are sometimes more amputees that lose through vascular or diabetes that might not have years ago survived to that point in their illness. So possibly so. And then there's, at this point in our history, we're getting a lot of veterans that are coming back, but they're kind of a whole other story in of themselves. But we still see a lot of health-related amputees.
So, Don Crosby, 40 years of being an amputee, how has the others changed in terms of seeing you, working with you, looking at you? Has it changed in any way?
If it's changed in any way, it's gone from acceptance to the fact that it's been there for 40 years. They really don't see a whole lot of difference. It's more that the new people I meet who react, as opposed to the people who've known me for 40 years. Mary will tell me on occasion she'll get after me because if I walk properly on a level floor, you would not know that I'm an amputee. I tend to get lazy on occasion, and Mary will, if she sees me, will remind me that you can walk better than that.
It's my job.
Yes, it is. And she takes it to heart, and she will do that. But I've gotten to the point where it is not my problem. If you have a problem with it, it's your problem. And in fact, there are times when I will take great pride in pulling practical jokes on people who don't know I'm an amputee.
Sorry. I'm not sure that I want to envision that. For some reason, Charlie Brown and Snoopy came to mind. I don't know why, of playing a prosthetic joke on someone. Let me take a moment and thank L. Oppelman's for their support today. Central Virginia's Complete Music Headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender. Also available, complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, that's 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. All right, a question I have. Don Crosby, wearing long pants. Don Cornell, wearing shorts. And Judy, where we can see the lower part of your leg as well. Is that because that's just how it is? Mr. Crosby, you made that choice?
For the most part, I've made the choice to wear long pants. I mean, men typically do. There was a long period of time in the summers that I chose to wear long pants as opposed to shorts. But as I mentioned, over time, I've gotten to the point where if you want to look at me askew because I'm wearing shorts and I got a prosthesis on, it's your problem. It's not mine. So if I go to the beach or want to go swimming, and as a matter of fact, right now when I go to the gym, I wear shorts and work out where everybody can see it.
You know, since the Transformers movies have gotten really big, I mean, I've become a real big hit. My kids, you know, think I like got stuck in between transforming. I'm part robot, and I'm okay with that. I wanted to put something out there, though, is, you know, for these people to allow their children to be curious. You know, a lot of times you see parents shun their children away from looking at an amputee.
Don't look at
yeah,
them.
Yeah, let your children look. Let them be curious. Most amputees are willing to, hey, it's okay. Come up and touch it. It's not going to hurt you. And that's been a huge...
Because kids are honest. They're just curious. They're not trying to be mean or anything. But if the parent makes them feel like they were doing something wrong, then they're going to see people in the community and shun away from them because their parent has taught them there's something wrong. Don't talk to them, you know.
Right.
And Dawn's right. If the kid just wants to ask a question, educate them so that the next person they see, they'll be comfortable with.
It's amazing how the children, after the, once they see it, touch it, whatever, and then they're like, yeah, whatever, and go on about their business, and they don't care. So they see the next amputee, and they don't think twice about them. It's just like another person.
That's right.
So.
And Judy, again, we go back to the fact that this is all new to you, but here you are today wearing shorts, and I guess it's not a big deal.
No.
You're not trying to hide it.
No. Plus, it's easier. Long pants is just something you have to roll up, and it's too hot. No, it's. I'm proud I have another leg, and I'm walking. I can move around and do. And as Dawn said, I have a almost 3-year-old grandson, and he's been staring at it, and then finally he came up broke, Granny. Yeah, but I'm gonna fix it. We're gonna fix it with the other leg. So he's. He's fine with it now, so.
What's cute is when Dawn's children finally realized that if they took her leg away, she couldn't quite get to them as easily. So, Jacob and Joe, if you're listening, you know, your mom's figured that one out. So, but kids are just honest. I work with the camp for kids that are amputees. And one thing I learned from them that Dawn brought up, too, is that this one young girl that was born without an arm below the elbow, and she was just in conversation with some of the other kids. Somebody said, oh, I doubt I'll ever date. And, you know, they're saying, oh, sure you will. No boy is ever going to want to date me. And this girl spoke up and she said, well, if he looks at you and doesn't like you because you don't have an arm or a leg, then that's great because he's not somebody you want anyway. You know, it's my barometer of what kind of person they are. So I've never forgotten that, and that was out of the lips of a young girl who had already figured that out for herself. So
11:55 on the wake-up call. Just a few minutes left with our guests today, Mary Grant, Judy Martin, Dawn Cornell, and Don Crosby. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. I hope this is appropriate. Don Crosby, we'll start with you. The gentleman that I keep referring to that I know through a coworker who is now an amputee had something happen to him recently that sort of tested his limits. And again, he's new within his first year as well, where he had an accident. He fell over. And that, I guess that tested his self-consciousness. It tested his willpower and his ability to solve the problem. And I laugh because, and I'm not going to admit who it was, but he solved the problem by taking his pants off so he could get out from what he was stuck attached to. Have you had a similar incident where the loss of limb put you in a situation where that challenged you so much?
There are situations that you can get in that will do that. I mean, I love to fish. My kids love to fish, and we used to go to a place in the Middle River and trying to over in the valley, trying to get down to this place could be challenging with rocks and moss and down trees, and you're constantly worried about is your foot going to get caught on a vine that you're not expecting. So you have to worry about that. But I also worry about on rainy days. I hate going into stores that have vinyl floors, because if you get a rainy day and if you're walking normally and you're not thinking about the floor being wet, the next thing you know, you're going to be on the floor because you hit the floor wrong and Woody slipped out from beneath you. But the one funny experience I had was fishing with my daughter. The Middle River doesn't tend to be that deep, but somehow the little boat that we were in at the time sank, and I'm here trying to hold my daughter up to grab a limb, and I'm sinking, and Woody is floating to the top of the water while the rest of me is sinking.
Woody's his prosthesis.
Yes, yes. You said something about everyone having, many people having a name.
Yep.
All right, we have a call. If I can do this right this time. Caller, how are you? All right. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong. It's just so many people. When you don't have a set of headphones, I don't have headphones for everybody today, so I'm trying to push buttons to make it work, and I'm obviously not doing well. Call back and give Kristen your question, and we'll do it that way. Bobby from Charlottesville. But just a minute or two left. Dawn Cornell, do you have a situation like that that sort of challenged you and now you can look back and laugh at?
Actually, it's kind of a daily. You get daily challenges. Something as simple as going to the beach. Walking on sand is not simple. On a prosthetic. Wrapping it up in paper bags. And you want to talk about getting some looks from some people.
Wrapping it in paper
wrap
bags.
Wrap the prosthetic up in paper bag or plastic bags and duct tape so that you can, you know, not worry about getting it wet or getting the salt water onto your metal leg. As my youngest son would say, you know, you're starting to rust and you're squeaking, Mom, you need to do something. Yeah, I mean, it's in a lot of what Don says, you don't really know where your foot's going. So if you catch it on something, you know, normally you can catch yourself if you're going to fall, but with a prosthetic leg, not so easy.
Judy, do you have any particular things that concern you more than another about a situation?
So far, luckily, nothing has happened yet, but it scares me that I'm going to catch my foot on something and I'm going to be standing up there pulling it and probably pull something off. I don't know, but my door at home gives me a problem. And you step up with your good foot, and then I catch my prosthetic leg on the door bottom, and it's like, oh, well, why can't I get in the house? But, I mean, it's nothing serious so far. I'm scared of falling. I'm very scared of falling, and I won't be able to get up that commercial. But so far, so good.
Mary Grant, we have just about 60 seconds left. Your concerns, or the concerns that you deal with most with the people in the support group, is there something that you, a way to help people with these? Judy talks about falling and can't get up. I would think that that's got to be a major concern.
I think falling for most of my folks is the biggest fear. They think if I fall, I won't know how to get up. And so usually I always talk to, and the therapist always, that's part of their therapy. Eventually they're going to learn how to get up if they do fall, so that they're not so afraid. We've run the gamut of conversations in our support group, from phantom pain issues, from relationships. What do you do when you travel? I mean, what are any restrictions for that? We talk about everything. We've had speakers in. We welcome anybody coming to the group if they have a concern, because I guarantee you somebody else there has figured it out, or at least is trying to. So I don't think there's just one thing. It's just things come up in life.
Yeah, that's just some very cool questions. I wish we had another 10 minutes to talk about. How do you travel? Maybe I'll send an email out and we can put that at the bottom of the podcast. Again, Limbs on the Go, a support group, second Tuesday of every month at Health South.
Yes.
Please, and again, if you have a question, you have some more information that you'd like to receive, put it on the webpage, cvillepodcast.com. I'll be glad to send it off to Mary and see what we can do to provide information for you. Thanks to Don Crosby, Dawn Cornell, Judy Martin. Thank you so much for coming in today. I thought it was a wonderful show. I've, as always, the really good shows are where I learn more than anything else. I won't be here next week. Sean McCord will be. Thank you so much, folks. In 2 weeks, it'll be Dave Norris from Charlottesville mayor position. Thank you.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.